Swarbrick on LBC with cybersecurity from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
10 to 6, Friday evening, Tom Swarbrick here on LBC means, as you know, one thing. Pin your ears back, set phasers to sun, and open that tin. Relax, sit back, he'll take it from here. It's Simon Marks, American Week.
Tom, you've got to give credit where it's due, and as tough as it has been for some people to do that this week, the reality is that Donald Trump had a blinder of a Monday.
It is now my distinct honour to invite the President of the United States of America to address the Knesset.
Thank you very much. Thank you. After two harrowing years in darkness and captivity, 20 courageous hostages are returning to the glorious embrace of their families, and it is glorious. 28 more precious loved ones are coming home at last to rest in this sacred soil for all of time. Today the skies are calm, the guns are silent, the sirens are still, and the sun rises on a holy land that is finally at peace, a land and a region that will live, God willing, in peace for all eternity.
Now look, I know the peace deal that he forced on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu may not hold. And indeed, there are already some major snags over the return of the remains of those 28 dead Israeli hostages, many of whom Hamas now says it cannot find. Certainly, all of that talk about the Middle East now being on the brink of peace for the rest of time is undoubtedly overblown, but there is no question that Trump deserves credit for securing the return of the living hostages from Gaza this week, and the return into Palestinian hands of 2,000 detainees held by Israel. He has not had a better day as America's president than Monday, a day on which he basked in the glory of his reception in the Middle East and sought to settle some pretty old scores.
It is a good feeling. Isn't that nice to say? You know, I just said the hostage, first time I said the hostages are back, it feels so good to say it. But when you settle 8 wars in 8 months, that means you don't like war. Everyone thought I was going to be brutal. In fact, I remember Hillary Clinton during a debate, she said, he's got a personality that's all about war. No, and my personality actually is all about stopping wars, and it seems to work. Seems to work.
And just for the record, he has not settled 8 wars in 8 months. But the thing about this American week is that two competing narratives can simultaneously be true. Trump can argue that he's brought a measure of peace to the Middle East, at least short term, but he can also be justifiably accused of waging war elsewhere and flouting international law in the process.
We are certainly looking at land now because we've got the sea very well under control.
That was Donald Trump, the great peacemaker, indicating on Wednesday that he may soon launch airstrikes on Venezuela. He has, as you know, blown at least 6 speedboats out of the waters of the Caribbean, claiming, without providing any proof, that he was targeting Venezuelan drug traffickers, allegedly bringing their narcotics to American shores. Now he's authorized the CIA to engage in covert action in Venezuela to bring down the drug cartels and possibly also President Nicolas Maduro, who denies US claims of personal involvement in trafficking operations. The president was asked if he's given the CIA the order to kill the Venezuelan dictator.
Oh, I don't want to answer a question like that. That's a ridiculous question for me to be given. Not really a ridiculous question, but wouldn't it be a ridiculous question for me to answer?
I'll put that down as a definite maybe. There is no legal authority that the White House even points to justifying its extrajudicial maritime attacks in the Caribbean. And if those airstrikes begin on Venezuelan soil, the man claiming to be a peacemaker in the Middle East may find himself stirring up a hornet's nest in Latin America. Should war begin with Venezuela, it will be conducted without the presence of a press corps at the Pentagon. For the first time since 1973, when the iconic building opened, no major news outlet is any longer covering events inside the complex. Secretary of War Pete Hegseth implemented new rules requiring Pentagon-based reporters to submit all their reporting to the Pentagon's press office prior to publication, face severe consequences for publishers, publishing information without official permission, and he sought to ban reporters from even trying to get sources to leak information to them. Every major news organization, including pro-Trump networks, Fox News and Newsmax, told Hegseth to stuff it. So as of now, a government department spending $1 trillion of taxpayer money and often waging secret wars overseas has not a single journalist working inside the building and scrutinizing its operations.
Over the years I covered the Pentagon, we often, all of us, ran into the Secretary of Defense or the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and they would come to the press area to have a chat.
Barbara Starr is CNN's former Pentagon correspondent. She worked in the building for more than 20 years.
What Hegseth is about to lose, I don't think he even comprehends. He's about to lose the ability to have communication with millions of Americans who read blogs, read newspapers, tune into TV to get military news, to find out what's going on, to find out how their tax money's being spent, what the troops are up to, how military families are doing, how women and minorities are doing in the military. He's going to have a tough time really communicating.
Now, with absolute respect to the great Barbara Starr, there is not much evidence that Pete Hegseth cares about any of that. He seeks free rein to do whatever he wants at the Pentagon without any scrutiny. And now he's got it. Along with the president and his cabinet colleagues, he treats all aspects of oversight and accountability with complete disdain. Whether it's the media, Congress, the courts, or government ombudsman, this administration doesn't want to know. As a direct consequence, the masked agents with Donald Trump's Immigration and Customs Enforcement Division now operate without any meaningful constraints. This week, breaking into a family home in western Oregon. A baby crying in the background as the father was seized. It is unclear whether Trump's masked thugs had a warrant to enter the property. But that's where even basic accountability has now been incinerated. Journalists in Oregon were told by ICE this week that the operational tempo and increased interest in ICE's mission make it difficult for the agency to respond to requests from news organizations about individual arrests. Translation, we'll do whatever the hell we want. Which takes us to one of the other very worrying developments in America this week.
We are getting a window into how a new generation of Republican activists talk when they think no one's listening, and it's really ugly.
This morning, new fallout after the leak of racist text messages linked to members of young Republican groups across the country.
Calling black Americans monkeys, watermelon people, and the N-word. Flinging homophobic and bigoted slurs, dark jokes about gas chambers, even praise for Adolf Hitler.
MSNBC, ABC, and CNN covering what under normal circumstances would be a massive scandal. Young Republicans in four separate states sharing absolutely horrific comments about blacks, Latinos, LGBTQ Americans, and as you heard, expressing admiration for Hitler and his gas chambers. So you might think Republicans would move immediately to distance themselves from such disgusting conduct. In which case, Vice President J.D. Vance is here to set you straight.
The reality is that kids do stupid things. They tell edgy, offensive jokes. Like, that's what kids do. And I really don't want us to grow up in a country where a kid telling a very offensive, stupid joke is cause to ruin their lives.
Right, except a forensic examination of the texts conducted by Mother Jones magazine revealed that most of the worst offenders were not kids. They were aged between 24 and 35, with some as old as 40, leading Kathy Hochul, the Democrat governor of New York, if you remember the Democrats, to offer this observation.
This is not one person saying they love Hitler. This is a whole lot of people saying things that are so disgusting and so abhorrent that everybody from the president on down should condemn them.
Yes, well, good luck with that. President Trump is about to meet Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at the White House. The U.S. leader spoke yesterday to Vladimir Putin and says he will meet the Russian president again face-to-face soon in Budapest. Also this week, another Trump traitor is facing criminal charges. Former National Security Advisor John Bolton appeared in court this morning over his alleged mishandling of classified documents. As he continues to tear down people who have wronged him, Donald Trump is also making plans to build up monuments to himself in Washington.
We're going to have a phenomenal ballroom. This is going to be one of the best anywhere in the world.
The president this week addressing donors who have contributed untold amounts of money to finance the construction of his 90,000 square foot ballroom on the grounds of the White House. And he told them that he's not content with simply redesigning the White House. He wants to change the face of the city as well.
You're really here because you've contributed to this incredible building that people have wanted for so many years. And we show another building. It's an arc. Small, medium, and large, right? Whichever one they look good. I happen to think the large looks by far the best.
And they say size isn't everything. The president was brandishing there what is rapidly being referred to as the Arc de Trump, a cross between Marble Arch and the Arc de Triomphe, with a statue of Lady Liberty atop it that he's going to place directly opposite the Lincoln Memorial. An indelible mark of his time at the helm, and Tom, a reminder that unless fate intervenes, we've got at least three more years of this ahead.
From Washington, D.C., Simon Marks, American Week.